Thanks for listening to the podcast from Faith Radio Mornings.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings. Let it
rise. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Bill Arnold here with you. And I am trying as hard as I can without the risk of pulling a muscle. Anyway, we are having a great morning. We just left Dr. Kent Kaiser, and I only have so much outrage. I'm allocating my resources. I have to suspend my anger. I have to only reserve it for things in life that matter. So we have to be righteously anger. We need righteous anger, and we need to just not have low anger, right, Rebecca?
I think so. In fact, there's a verse that's coming to mind that says, be angry and sin not.
Exactly.
At least that's the old school translation I learned when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm. How was your outrage?
Just in general?
Or, in general.
Like, should I check my meter right
no,
now?
No, take a pulse. What is it?
I think I'm pretty good.
Okay.
I think I'm pretty good right now. I think the world has enough anger under control, and I'm just looking forward to see what God does with this beautiful morning.
It is gorgeous, and we are always glad that you're listening, and thank you for supporting Faith Radio and all the places in the Faith Radio network that tune in, and all of our listeners. You mean so much to us, and we really do love you, and we thank you for starting your day with us and then maybe listening throughout the day, because there's always so much great programming on the network. There's great Bible teaching, and then Neil Stavem, Connecting Faith. Of course, I think Neil is off this week.
Yes, but Connecting Faith is still on.
Of course, it's still on. It's where is Neil, by the way?
Points unknown,
points
I believe.
Unknown.
We saw him singing and skipping as he took off, so
I think that's true.
He needed a vacation, but we love him, so we'll look forward to when he's back as well.
And then, of course, Susie Larson in the afternoon from 3 to 5. Live the Promise is always something I look forward to.
Yes, and you can apply so much. I think that's one of the things I love about Faith Radio in general. It's not just because I work here, but I do listen as well. And there's always something you can apply to your life. You're able to take these complex biblical concepts sometimes.
Yes.
Or things where like, okay, well, I've heard that in the Bible, but how does that look in real life? And the great teachers here are always able to help me with that. I always come away with something that I end up thinking about throughout the day.
And I would say what Rebecca just said is so true. And I want to encourage you that you can trust God with the experience that you're having right now. Okay? You can trust God with that experience that you're having right now. Now, God has no worries about how he's going to produce glory in your life. He has no worries whatsoever. You might, but he doesn't. Isn't that good news? All right, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, Bill English is in studio, and he does have a little bit of sunburn from sitting out at the Indianapolis 500. So we're going to talk to him and find out what principle he can apply from that experience to business. Be back in a minute. Good morning, 8 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with us today. I'm Bill English in the studio, BibleandBusiness.com. Bill is a native of Indianapolis, grew up there. So he has a great love for that single-day sporting event called the Indianapolis 500. And he is just back from that event. And I'm going to let you indulge in some of the facts and figures of the Indy 500 for our listeners. And then I want to find out what business application you have for it.
So the Indianapolis 500 actually started in 1909, believe it or not, as a balloon race and motorcycle races. And then they would do some 100-mile automobile races. But the 500 itself didn't actually start until 1911. And Ray Haroon was the first person to win the Indianapolis 500 at a screaming average speed of 74.6 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can imagine that. When the track was first opened in 1909, think about what was going on in 1909. Okay. First of all, it wasn't Memorial Day. It was Decoration Day.
Of course.
I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
William Taft was president.
Mm-hmm.
Same year that the NCAA was founded. And you could send a first-class letter nationwide for 2 cents. Postage stamps were 2 cents. And a gallon of gasoline was only 6 cents.
And if you filled up, you probably got some glass from the gas station.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
And so the race was started by Carl Fisher. Now, does anybody know who Carl Fisher is?
No.
You know, Fisher Bodies from General Motors.
Okay.
Carl Fisher, right?
All right.
And he started it as a proving ground for new cars to test the reliability, the speed, strength, and endurance of the innovations that were happening in the automobile market. So they laid down the first track. It's a 2.5 mile oval. 3.2 million paving bricks went down, each of them 9.5 pounds in size. They laid it all in 63 days.
That's incredible.
That's a lot of people.
That is a lot of work.
Yeah, it is.
And how many miles?
Two and a half miles.
2.5 miles, and they laid it down in 63 days. Wow, that's cool.
That's why it's called the Brickyard.
Okay.
Okay. And there's still a 3-foot strip at the start-finish line of the original paving bricks that is still there today. So 9-degree bank in the turns, and Ray Haroon, like I said, won the first year. And he had one of the first inventions for cars. And he won because of his new invention called the rear view mirror.
Mm.
Now, automobiles up until that point, you couldn't see behind you. So all the other drivers had a second person in their car who would turn around and look and see who was coming up behind them, and then he would tell the driver. But Ray Haroon did a single-seat car and had a rearview mirror.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Other innovations from the Indianapolis 500 that we take for granted today include four-wheel anti-lock disc brakes. Those were developed at Indy.
Mm-hmm.
Shatterproof glass. Tire wear and stronger sidewalls, lightweight engine parts, turbochargers, front-wheel drive, banked curves on the roads, seat belts were invented at Indianapolis, four-wheel drive, aerodynamic improvements. You know, the crumple zones that we have in cars today were invented at the Indianapolis 500, and no alcohol consumption while driving started in 1914. So when Ray Haroon won the first race, you could drink and drive during the race. And so if you were in third place and needed another beer, you just grabbed one and you kept going.
Mm.
So
who's responsible for the invention of the latte cup holder?
We don't know that.
Okay. That's all I'm really interested in.
Do you do a latte in the morning on your way in?
Oh, yes.
Do you really?
Oh, sure.
Starbucks or Caribou?
I'm going to just remain silent on that one.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about this past Sunday's winner. It was a Japanese driver.
Yeah, Takuma Sato won, first Japanese person to win, and he won $2.46 million,
mm-hmm.
or actually his team did. Okay, and did you happen to watch either of you? Did either of you happen to watch on Sunday?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, you know, there was a very dramatic crash on lap 53 where Scott Dixon's hit Jay Howard's car and literally got launched in the air and probably went a good 0.2 mile in the air before landing on one of the guardrails.
Did you see that live?
I saw the beginning of it live.
Okay, all right.
Where our seats were, we
exactly.
could see the beginning
yeah.
of it.
Okay.
But we couldn't see the whole thing. And believe it or not, both of them walked away from the crash. Now, for those who actually saw this on television and you think, man, that was a horrible crash because all these parts are flying all over the place. Well, these cars are engineered to come apart during an accident so that the energy is dispersed and doesn't settle in on the driver inside the car. So when you see all these parts flying around, that's actually a good thing, not a bad thing.
Interesting. I did not know that.
And that's how they engineer those cars. But the race is very exciting. If you ever get a chance to go, Bill and Rebecca, I'll take you next year. We can have a Faith Radio contingent down there.
I'm busy.
But if...
pretty sure I'm busy.
Pretty sure you're busy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's a lot that business owners can learn about running their business just by watching the race.
Cool. I knew we left breadcrumbs so we could find our way back. and wow, here we are.
Oh, come on now.
No, this is all very interesting stuff. Very interesting. And the fact that you grew up there and this was a part of your family upbringing,
I find it
fascinating. I really do. I find this very interesting.
I've probably been a couple dozen times.
That's what I mean.
It's just baked in my blood, the Indianapolis 500.
And then, in fact, then you can draw business principles that we're going to talk about. And I think we're going to actually take a break now.
You want to do the break now?
I want to do the break now because when I come back, I want this to be uninterrupted because you're going to take what you learned from the Indianapolis 500 and apply it to business principles.
Yep.
And so you're not going to want to miss this. It's 15 minutes after the hour. We'll be right back with Bill English. 17 minutes after the hour. Good morning. Bill Arnold here with Bill English. In studio, we are chatting about his weekend experience at the Indianapolis 500. He gave some interesting facts and figures, but I knew it was pointing to something else, and in fact it is. He is going to share with us how the principles of a race like the Indianapolis 500 applies to business.
You know, in business, you need a lot of people to work together to achieve a common goal. And that's exactly what you have at the Indianapolis 500. If you've ever watched their pit stops, everybody has a specific job to perform. They're very good at it. And that's why they can get a car in, get 30 gallons inside that car and four new tires and get them back out inside of 8 seconds. Okay.
That makes me laugh.
It's just, and when all of them are coming in at the same time, and it's like this beehive flurry of activity, and then the cars are coming out of the pits at different times, and then they're trying not to bump into each other in this lane where they're only allowed to go 65 miles an hour. It's really quite exciting.
You didn't say that as a joke, did you?
No.
That they're going to do all this in 8 seconds.
No, they do it all in 8 seconds.
Sometimes
you
would say that to be, you know, to make a point, but it's actually the amount of time they spend in the pit stop.
Yeah.
And they change four tires and put 30 gallons of gas in.
Yeah.
In 8 seconds.
8 seconds, yeah. That fuel line dumps 6 seconds a gallon, or 6 gallons a second.
Okay.
Into the car.
All right.
So team members are picked because of their specific abilities to contribute. Right bus, right seats, right people is how I tend to look at it. So all races, religion, sexes, nobody cares about that at the 500. If you can do your job, you're in.
I would say that's a little bit of an adrenaline rush, isn't it?
It is.
For that team as the car comes into the pit stop.
It is. It's really something. Nothing, number two, nothing substitutes preparation. A lot of these teams will work hours and hours on the pit stops. Do you realize that if you come out of the pits 2 seconds late, you can drop 4, 5, 6 spots?
Of course I knew that.
In the standings of the race. Mm-hmm. And so they work very long on the pit stops. They work very hard on the cars, having endurance at 500 miles at 220 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
We saw 3 Honda engines blow during the race, and that was because the engines just couldn't endure.
Wow.
And so nothing substitutes preparation. Michael Andretti has won the last 3 out of the 4 races because his teams prepare so long for the Indianapolis 500, and they work so hard on it. So nothing substitutes preparation. Number 3, they all race according to the same rules. You can get these headsets at the Indianapolis 500 and listen both to the drivers in the pits talking to each other as well as the race official talking to the drivers.
Hmm.
And the race officials just do not care who you are. If you break a rule, they enforce the penalty. So Helio Castroneves, who's a 3-time winner and was riding in second place, was given what they call a drive-through in the pits because he passed under a yellow. And so even though he's one of the most popular and one of the most highly paid racers on the circuit, when he broke a rule, they enforced it, and he had to go 85 miles an hour through the entire pits, and he dropped, 10, 12 spots.
Wow.
as a result of that. They also treat each other with respect and politeness. Now, you wouldn't think that the racers would do this, but they all know each other,
mm-hmm.
and they all have to have a level of trust between each other to not do stupid things, because you have these cars at 220, 230 miles an hour, and your tires can be within a foot of each other,
mm-hmm.
Going into a turn or coming out of turn 2 into the backstretch, something like that. These drivers have to be able to depend on each other to do the right thing and to do the expected thing.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I saw Sato's interview after the race, and he was talking about how he passed Helio on the 197th lap eventually was the pass that helped him win. And he said, "I knew Helio wouldn't be stupid," was his quote. And so he was able to pass him because he knew Helio would not do something that he shouldn't.
So trust. Trust
yeah.
is a biggie.
It is.
Even amongst the competitors.
It really is.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. You got your whole life on the line there.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's really quite something. I also listened to the race official thank the pit car and thank the lead cars several times during the race. The race official has the ability to talk to everybody at the same time, all the pits, all the drivers. They have the ability to cut in and talk to everybody. And he would say, "Car 26, thank you so much for doing a great ride on this yellow. Okay, we're going to go green here soon," that kind of stuff.
Wow.
And it was, you know, that kind of politeness under stress is something that business owners sometimes don't have. And yet it really pays huge dividends when you can do that. I would also say that they pay attention to the fundamentals. Now, I don't know, what are the fundamentals of business? But at the race, they pay attention to the fundamentals, and they practice them over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think would be some fundamentals of business?
Let's see. Having good customer service.
Yeah, good customer service.
Yeah, consistent good customer service.
Yeah.
Being training your employees properly would be a fundamental, because sometimes when you get poor service, I think more of the management that didn't train this person well.
Right. Yeah. And so being able to do your job well, mm-hmm. good customer service, the right products that are made well, the right services that are delivered correctly,
mm-hmm.
those are the fundamentals of business. Good cash management, good cash flow, that kind of thing. How many businesses actually practice those things on a regular basis and they pay attention to what I would call the fundamentals? A lot of owners have a difficult time with that, and mm-hmm. because they don't know what the fundamentals are. But just like at Indianapolis, where these teams pay attention to the fundamentals of what it takes to win a race, good fuel management, good pit stops, good basic driving, so businesses need to do the same thing with theirs. Last but not least, and this is one that I could wax eloquent on, okay. No one is above coaching. These owners are going to coach these drivers over and over and over again. They're going to go back and watch tape, and they're going to look at how they were driving and where they should have passed and when they should have backed off. And, yeah, this guy's passing in. You don't want him to pass you, but at this point you got to let him go. He's really passed you, and now you need to just get in behind him and stay there and see if you can't look for an opportunity to pass back,
mm-hmm.
right? Multi-million dollar athletes, Peyton Manning, or a Takuma Sato, or a Michael Andretti, or any of those kind of people, the reason that they're multi-million dollar is because they are coached and they're willing to be coached throughout their entire career.
Mm-hmm.
One wonders how many small business owners ask for coaching. What can I do to be a better business owner? What can I do to be a better leader? What can I do to be a better person? Those kinds of things. How many leaders actually go and get coaching to make themselves better?
I want to know, Bill, how many leaders go get coaching but then actually do what they've been coached to do?
A lot of them don't.
A lot of them don't.
A lot of them have huge egos in business and in politics,
mm-hmm.
and it's very difficult to coach these individuals.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes they think to themselves, this confirms that you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, right? maybe so, but it, to my way of thinking, if you're not open to being coached, then you're not improving, you're not evolving, you're devolving.
Mm-hmm. I like the fact that in the race business, there is a culture of respect, and that there is that politeness you talk about and respect amongst the competitors, and just the fact that there's a culture that is,
yeah,
that is kind of a
if you were to go back and look at the film, when Takuma Sato pulls into the pits after winning the race, Elio Castroneves, who came in second and is a three-time winner, was standing there, and he put his thumb up as Takuma drove by, and he put his thumb up and said, you know, good job, way to go, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of respect at that level is absolutely necessary for those guys to race together.
Yeah. Does anyone race with their arm out the window?
No. You wouldn't have an arm.
Really couldn't get a tan, could you?
You know, those guys pull 2.5 G's in every turn.
Do they really?
Yeah. They have a strap that keeps their head level,
mm-hmm.
a strap from the helmet to their left shoulder.
That is so intense.
It is an intense race.
Wow.
To anybody out there, if you ever get a chance to go to the Indianapolis 500, go.
That's speaking of
you will not
someone
regret
who
it.
Grew up there. And also, what are the cost of these cars? What is the typical cost of a race car?
I think it's somewhere around $500,000 to $750,000.
Okay, and you still have to climb in through the window. I don't get it.
You know, it's a rich man's game.
It is. We'll take a short break. And
not for you and I.
No, not for me, that's for sure. But when we come back, we're going to talk to BJ Thompson on building a better us. How cool is that going to be? Be back in just a minute. It is 1:30. We're going to take a short news break. And then when we come back, BJ Thompson is going to talk to us about My Hope Is. It's a platform for ministry among young Black men and women seeking to encourage them in their life. Very excited to talk to him about that. We'll be back in just a minute. Twenty-five minutes until the top of the hour. Is your inner critic nagging you? That's no fun. If you want to learn to understand your inner critic, Kim Fredrickson is an author and a speaker. She says when we make mistakes, our inner critic works overtime, but there are things you can do to counter those negative thoughts in a healthy way. She offers these ideas.
Being able to self-soothe just means coming up with ways that will help you calm down emotionally. Because when you self-soothe, your heart rate, your blood pressure, everything goes down to a manageable level. So I have tons of ideas in the book, but things like deep breathing and imagery and even imagining you with the Lord taking care of you and speaking to yourself gently with compassion, meditating on God's scriptures about his love and compassion for us. So these are really important ways to bring calm and comfort. We need ways to self-soothe that are healthy, okay? Not things like addictions that make us not feel. I'm not talking about that kind of, okay? I'm talking about the healthy way of helping your body go from distress to calm.
You know, sometimes the biggest bully out there is your own inner critic. You got to learn how to deal with that little guy, that little person who's nagging at you. Anyway, if you want to hear that whole interview, go to myfaithradio.com. Type in self-compassion, and Kim Fredrickson is the author and speaker that gave that interview. Very interesting. We're going to take a little breather, and then when we come back, BJ Thompson is on the line, and we're going to talk about building a better us. Be back in a minute.
Are you tired of policing your teen to make sure he gets his homework done? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Here's something I tell all the kids that live with me at Heartlight. I don't care about your academics. If you want to graduate on time, then graduate on time. And if you want my help, I'm happy to do anything I can. Now, you and I know that I'm greatly concerned about their academic work. But I make it their responsibility to get it done. They know I'm willing to help them in the process, but I'm not going to do the work for them. Mom, Dad, let your child take responsibility for his schoolwork, even if it means letting them fail. The lessons learned from a D or F today will keep them from failing in the future.
Find more parenting help from Mark Gregston when you go online to parentingtodaysteens.org. That's parentingtodaysteens.org.
It's almost 20 minutes until the top of the hour. We all need to build a better us, don't we? And I've got on the studio line BJ Thompson, who has got a buildabetterus.com and myhopeis.com. And one of the goals that he has is to raise up a generation of men and women who are equipped to positively affect the world in their respective career fields. And he has a love and a passion for young minorities who often encounter oppressive systems in their academic, their social, and their financial and corporate endeavors. BJ, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me this morning.
You got your work cut out for you, my friend.
I do. Pray for me.
But you are the man for the job, just so you know.
I hope so. I hope so, Paul.
Yeah.
I really hope so.
Yeah. So let's talk about the ministry, the initiative that you have with My Hope Is. It's a platform for young black men and women, and you're seeking to encourage them in several different areas. Let's talk about what they are.
Absolutely. So myhopeis.com was birthed out of, I think, just a sense of despair and feeling the cultural shift, climate of tensions, and you know, really people losing the sight that there's a grace that can happen despite darkness. And so instead of allowing myself to become more cynical, which I begin to really feel, I said, man, there has to be a hope. And that hope has to be, you know, with this next generation. And so, I partnered with the Navigators and said, man, I need to begin to help inspire hope in this next generation of youth. And instead of scolding them with, you know, what they should do, what if we started teaching them again? What if we started modeling out healthy leadership on an emotional, spiritual, and relational level, and multiply that health on campus, and then with the hopes of that impacting the world. So absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Now, BJ, you've got the solution broken down into a couple of four different categories that all start with the letter C, which makes it really easy for guys like me. You start with.
I'm a preacher, so this is how it works.
Oh, I love it. I love it. You start with competency, and you say we need to actually equip. I think what you just said was interesting because we need to model stuff so people can observe and learn and say, I've seen it done, therefore I can do it too.
Absolutely. So competency really has to do with the idea of not only understanding your job and profession, but understanding the world around you, how it works, and being able to help bring about change within the larger society and the global atmosphere. So we wanted to really emphasize that. I think oftentimes we send our students to undergrad or to graduate school and do a great job in their specific career field, but the real life skills or even just understanding how society around them operates is really absent. And so we really emphasize helping people develop incompetency. Along that spectrum, we also help people develop in compassion, that they see people as people, not just as a transaction, because we recognize that human beings need that dignity. Then it's the connection, where these students recognize they're just a small piece of a larger picture. They're not the whole enchilada. Can I still say that?
You can still say that. Mm-hmm. I know what I'm having for lunch now, too.
That's right. And then the last thing we really emphasize is the development of character, that there's a moral compass that's driving you. We want to help you learn how to make good moral decisions in a maturing way. So, yeah, that's kind of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. I bet you got a great story that comes out of this. Do you live and work in the Atlanta area?
I do.
Okay.
I do.
So when you're mentoring some of these youth, do you have a story that you can share?
Oh, absolutely. You know, one of the things about mentoring is, you know, you recognize that this is you. This is a picture of yourself. This is not, you know, you're not just putting a hand out. You're helping someone else. You're helping yourself. And I've had a lot of young men and women specifically who come from, you know, different forms of homes. And we just try to model out family, marriage, talk more about relationships, talk about their faith. Instead of communicating it, modeling, showing it. One day I was with a young man, and he just started getting really starry-eyed. And I looked around. I was like, man, are you okay? And he looked at me and he said, man, I want a family like this. And it kind of threw me back, Paul. It kind of took me back. And I said, what's happening? He said, when I'm out of school, I want to have a marriage, a family, and a life like this. And it was very challenging, man. So, yeah, just the power of modeling out, I think we really downplay that. So, yeah, it's a really sweet time and a really sweet kid. And so, yeah.
There's something I can't tell you who said this. I wished I could come up with it, but it goes something like...
Make it up. Just say, it's yeah, a person said.
So yeah, exactly. This one person said, much smarter than me, tell me and I'll probably forget. Show me and I might remember. Involve me and I'll understand. So when you model this behavior, you're actually involving them to a point where they start to experience what it is that they want to do themselves. You've given them a vision beyond their own vision, which is probably small to start with, and you start giving them a bigger vision, and they start getting excited because life
Absolutely.
Is big, and life in Christ is abundant, and God calls us to have an abundant life by serving others and thinking of others more than we think about ourselves, which is awfully hard to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. BJ, very interesting so far. You've scored 19 points. I have to take 2 points away for calling me Paul because my name is Bill, but I'm not going to document that you too much, but we'll be back in just a minute. More with BJ Thompson in just a minute. Minutes until the top of the hour, building a better us and My guest, BJ Thompson, is doing that in his area. He lives in Atlanta. He's mentoring a lot of mainly black youth that haven't had good male role models. And BJ, one of the questions I have for you, as we're trying to rebuild a community, leadership, of course, can come from a father, but what happens if he is not present?
Man, that is a great question. You know, the word of God says that, you know, revere older man as a father, older woman as a mother, and a younger woman as a sister with all purity. And I think what happens within the context of the body of Christ, there is a natural opportunity where there has been absence of role models to rebuild the family structure via the spiritual family. And so that's kind of what many of us have experienced, those of us who've been mentored, where there's gaps that, you know, the Lord has used many of those spiritual figures to speak into maybe some areas that we need some help and some care.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's an important thing for us to see our role as potentially becoming that for someone else.
Yeah. BJ, this morning, earlier on, I had a conversation with Karen Swanson, who's from the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association. She's involved uh-huh. in the prison ministry aspect, and she was talking about a judge who coined the term NORP, which stands for Normal, Ordinary, Responsible Person, who is self-reliant, uh-huh. understands responsibility, and knows what is morally right. And, you know, sometimes there is a problem with families from the get-go because there's so much dysfunction that starts with it. So we can't even say that a normal person under those circumstances is learning how to become self-reliant or understands responsibility
yeah.
or knows what is morally right. There's so much teaching that needs and mentorship that's required just to help shape
Absolutely.
That person into a godly person.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and I think there's both the individual and collective responsibility. You know, one thing that is very shocking is that as you study some of the decision-making that occurred, you know, even within the context of the nation, we kind of intentionally created structures that would disadvantage and even impoverish people so that they would not either intentionally or have a sense of strong responsibility the way that we structured welfare, the way that they would structure your ability to gain Section 8 housing without fathers. I think there's been a lot of things that have occurred up until this point that bear both the individual and the collective responsibility of a society. And so my job right now is to kind of learn some of those things, not per se judge all the things that have occurred up until this point, but then to get people involved in things like myhopeis.com and say, listen, guys, we can either continue to complain and say, man, there's none of these people out here, or I feel like there should be more responsibility, or we can work together as brothers and sisters across cultures and say, we're going to put our hands to the plow. We're going to help people who don't look like us, and we're going to build a society that will ultimately serve our children in the future of different backgrounds and ethnicities. And so that's what myhopeis.com is saying. We recognize there's issues. We have all contributed to those in some way as a society, but now let's work together to do something for our neighbors. And that's what myhopeis.com is about. So, absolutely.
Yeah, BJ, I'm curious as to what you think about how we're doing in the racial reconciliation department.
Uh-oh,
did I just drop some bomb?
How are we doing?
Yeah, how are we doing, brother?
So here's what I would say.
Are you gasping?
All
right.
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
I think that it is an overwhelming burden for many people. I think that because of it moves beyond presuppositions, it moves beyond a lot of pathology into informed perspectives, that it creates a lot of anxiety and people just freeze up. They feel so bad and they want to see change so seriously that they don't know what to do. They end up not doing anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I would say is this part of this issue, and I speak about this a lot, you know, when I travel, but part of the issue is you kind of need to relinquish some of the power and empower those people who are already doing the work. You know, I love getting a nice haircut. And I'm burdened to see people with nice haircuts.
Yeah.
But Yeah, that's right. I am really burdened for that. So you see me, you're going to know, like, okay, this guy's really burdened for a nice haircut. but here's the thing, though. I am unequipped to do those things, and I have to pay a barber who's qualified, who's gone to school, who's competent in order to execute that task. And I think one way that we can grow in this racial reconciliation era is instead of just allowing ourselves to feel guilty, we help contribute to the initiatives and things that would move the ball forward.
Mm-hmm.
And we learn on the fly in ways, you know, ways that we can better serve the varying neighbors. So I would say, I think this is a very challenging and revealing season for us. But one way that we can help is by looking for opportunities to create, you know, real meaningful unity and dignity. That's one of the things we're doing at MyHopeIs.com is we're not building people who lack dignity. We want people to know their God-given worth and dignity, but to also be eye-to-eye with a lot of these institutions. And so that's a little new because most people are not accustomed to that sort of dignity. They like the dignity of get a job, get off the streets, maybe get a hot meal. They're not accustomed to the peer-to-peer dignity. But that's what real diversity is the ability for us to collaborate with one another with a sense of equality. So,
how do you speak long-range thinking into their lives?
Ooh, great question.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm throwing the fastballs BJ.
Hey, come on, man. So a lot of the, a lot of young men and women see in a very contemporary sense. And so I think one way that you speak the long range into their lives is by putting them in front of older people. You have to see what an outcome, an activity will take you multiplied over the next couple of years. And so we put them around older people. Also, you begin to speak trajectory. You help them imagine what would happen and occur. What would be the result of doing a certain thing over a period of time? And I think that in itself causes people to have to reevaluate if they're exposed to it. You know, one thing about the college campus is we kind of send our children there, and whoever is there in terms of maturity, wisdom, insight, ultimately is the person who becomes to shape them for the next 4 to 5 years. In my case, 6 years. But the next 6 years, you will be shaped by whatever scope of wisdom there. And that's the wisdom that I carried into my adult life. And so one of the things we want to do is create present, mature, wise people on the college campus so that when parents are sending the students, they're sending them to a place where there are people who love their wives or husbands, who are responsible citizens, and have a sense of training and development that can help pour into the next generation. So I think that it has to occur, trajectory has to occur with intentionality, but it's more modeling and it's helping that individual think, if I continue to do this, this is where this will lead me. And the question is that where you truly want to go?
Mm-hmm. BJ, one of the things I'm hearing you say as we wrap up our time is speak to the older people. I'm not saying old, but just the people older that can step up and be older role models.
Yeah. There's a great opportunity. I often hear a lot of millennial bashing, and I think it's because there's a lot of misunderstanding about this next generation and who are they and what do they really desire and do they have worth and value to the conversation. And we can all be a mentor to someone. There's something valuable that you've learned over the years that you can contribute to another life. And I think we need to begin to stop downplaying that because there's a great gap that exists in the midst of the generations. And it doesn't take much. It just takes a little intentionality.
Yep.
It takes you carving out time in your schedule and saying, this is going to be the designated time.
Yeah.
It also causes you and it begs you to find people who are faithful to that time and willing to take notes and be involved. So,
awesome.
BJ.com, check us out.
We got to run. Thank you so much for coming on. What does a cool guy like you pay for a haircut?
Man, like $25.
Awesome. All right. Have a great day, my friend. All right.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. It is a couple of minutes until the top of the hour. We'll be right back to wrap things up. You can trust God with the experience you're having right now. He loves you. So do we. See you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this Faith Radio Mornings podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Faith Radio Mornings, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or on your podcast player. And thanks for sharing the audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings.